Outkick 360 is back. Hour number two in what has been a couple of jam-packed shows live in Knoxville. Great hosts here at Clancy's Tavern and Whiskey House. Yes, I'm aware I've got some haunting guy behind me. People are pointing that out on Twitter. I'm sure I just stole a joke by Austin Price. That's why I said it from the jump. Austin Price, Brent Hubbs, the VolQuest, Power Hour, alongside Chad Withrow. I'm Jonathan Hutton. Crew's all here. Levi Gibson. We've got Jakob Swanson. Lance Lee. David Reed, the chairman of the board, making the show happen for us back in Nashville along with Sleepy Danny. Tennessee wins the season opener over Bowling Green. And for the next hour, we recap Tennessee Bowling Green, look ahead to the week, and much, much more. Gentlemen, great to have you on site. In person here in Knoxville.
Glad to be here. Welcome to Knoxville. Glad you guys are here. Y'all's credits is like something that Ward had. You know, John Ward had. He had like 19 people working for him, you know. Natasha Minneapolis and all these other people that handled his travel. I mean, you got a laundry list of people.
Yeah, this is all part of Austin's demands.
Yeah.
Everywhere he goes, he needs a handler. He needs a production assistant. He always needs someone around to help with anything that he needs.
I know we got to get done in the hour within the hour because his chariot's going to get a ticket outside if we don't get out of here.
He came in with demands. Like, this has to be done by 5 p.m., guys.
We're throwing rose petals out for him when he walks in. I mean, it's a show.
I'm thrilled that you guys are here live with us because I said this to start the show, but the chemistry between us and really between you guys is great, but Zoom just doesn't do it justice. So to have a real life in person Power Hour, this is the way it needs
special.
I thought it was that really sensitive microphone that's on the Andy Griffith show when Barney, when the guy sings in the back. Oh, my bad.
By the way, that was the only reference that Brent would ever get was that Andy Griffith show reference.
Yeah, you're exactly right.
Do not reference Shawshank Redemption or anything like that.
Yeah, any current movie in the last 30 years. No, you're right. I mean, I think there is a chemistry, and I think it comes with the fact that, you know, I'm just naturally lighthearted and like to cut up and have brought that out in Brent because he's naturally more reserved or negative, the general's quarters.
You're so negative, Brent.
20 years, guys. It's been a long time.
Yeah. You see, I'm drinking water. Hubs is liquors down here.
He's Harry Doyle from Major League over here.
I think 289 or 84 straight games that I've seen, and not all of them have been good,
that's
fellas.
True.
So is it Monty? Is that his sidekick?
Dynamite drop in, Monty, on the fly ball caught on the diving catch. By the way, Hutton, I'm jealous that you're being haunted by some old man. I'm being haunted by a soccer jersey behind me the entire time. Speaking of being haunted, we go right into it this way. Tennessee's been haunted by last season, this entire offseason. 37 plays you guys wrote at VolQuest to end last season against Texas A&M. 88 plays on offense start this game. To me, that's the biggest takeaway, that we knew the offense was fast, and they did it in game one. Mixed results with it, but they were able to accomplish what they set out to do.
Yeah, I mean, again, was it perfect? No. I said this last night on our podcast. I get why Tennessee fans have some angst. Joe wasn't perfect. The wide receivers sure weren't perfect. But they were able to run the football. I will look back at our score predictions, Brent. I mean, you picked them probably more than anybody. I think you picked them, 56-10? I think it was like – yeah, so that's 46. I picked them 52-17, so that's 35-point differential. They won by 32. I mean, like, the difference being is just offensively they didn't put up 50 points. They at times didn't look very attractive. But defensively they did what they were supposed to do. Again, I think it's too quick to judge this team. Maybe they are who they were last night all year, but that team 2 years ago was terrible against Georgia State and BYU in losses, and then found a way to win 8 games. So, I mean, teams you hope get better over the course of the season. And if you're Josh Heupel, you're hoping to see improvement going into Pitt and then so on and so forth the rest of the way.
Well, I mean, if you take the first quarter, everybody's going, hey, this is going to be 63-3. I mean, this thing's a home run. You know, I mean, they can score as many as they want. Shades of Louisiana Monroe are coming back, you know, where they score 70 points. The problem is, you know, they got out of rhythm in the second quarter, and Joe never got it back. 2 of 12 throwing the football after the first quarter for Joe Milton. He's got to be better. And so there's where your angst comes from. The biggest takeaway, if you're looking big picture, is what you're talking about, and that is real simple, Chad. You walked out of there last night going, all right, this is what they are. Here's their identity. It might not have been executed well, but you know exactly what they want to do. Whereas there were times whether you walked out of the stadium the last couple of years offensively going, what's Jim Chaney trying to do? One week it's jumbo with seven offensive linemen. The next week it's empty with five wide. And, you know, what are they? You walked out of there last night going, it may or may not work. If they don't get a first down, it's going to be hard to execute, but you know exactly what they want to do offensively.
Yeah, when they fell out of rhythm, it was, you know, playing behind the sticks, Jonathan. I mean, like, yeah. they got, you know, they were pretty clean penalty-wise, but, you know, they had a couple of moments there in the second quarter when Cooper Mays went out where they just kind of lost rhythm and it just kind of spiraled the other direction. And then kudos to, you know, Bowling Green for eating up a lot of clock during that time.
6-0 in the second quarter. It was quite the second quarter for Bowling Green. Look,
it's so weird because you still, at halftime, Hutton and I are looking at each other thinking, they're still okay.
Yeah, no.
There was
never any danger
at all. It was like Tennessee's going to get the ball and probably go down and score. And there's an 8-play, all-run drive to start the second half that takes less than 2 minutes off the clock. So it was a weird second quarter for sure.
I wanted to see the offense and the quarterback, and I want to get into that in a moment. I also just wanted to see a team that looked organized, that showed energy, executed, and maybe lacking on the execution part a bit, but the penalties were way low. I mean, I like what this team did last night, despite some of the negative takeaways, which is fine and it's fair. I like the organization. I like a team that came out and you mentioned the identity, Brent, and I think it's perfect because it looked like they knew who they were from the jump. They're not trying to figure it out.
Yeah, no doubt. And again, I'm going to show my scars a little bit, but we've seen openers where guys, they didn't line up on one side of the ball on defense, right? Like on the defensive line,
right.
There's nobody there. We've seen coming out of timeouts and openers, you got to, out of a TV timeout, you got to call a timeout because you got too many men on the field. I mean, you've seen moments where it was just kind of felt like utter chaos and utter confusion. There was never that. Did they execute it well enough? No.
Mm-hmm.
If they play next Saturday like they played last night, they're not going to beat Pittsburgh.
Agreed.
But you don't walk away out of there going, well, they're poorly coached, they're dysfunctional, they're disorganized, they're this, they're that. I mean, they look like a team that was ready to go play a game. They just didn't execute well enough. And we didn't always see that in years past. And I'm not just talking about Jeremy Pruitt. I'm talking about in years past, we've not always seen season openers where they executed and they didn't have all these operational errors, if
you
will.
Are you saying that 14 men on the field at LSU was just, you know, that was par for the course?
Just bad luck.
Bartender!
Bad luck is all it is.
You make that a double?
It'd be funny if a girl just walked over here.
They will.
So, you know what? Amazing to me, just thinking about Tennessee last night and other conversations Hutton and I were having about the game. How many times have we watched Tennessee play an inferior opponent in the past and say to ourselves, boy, if Tennessee can't run it on Northern Illinois, how are they going to run it on Florida? Or if they can't run it on Troy, how are they going to run the ball against Alabama? That was easy last night. I mean, Hutton and I are watching. I look at them and say, it's really not complicated. They could run the ball for 8 yards a carry every single time and not even threaten to pass in this game and win going away. That was a nice change with that offensive line.
Yeah, now I'm going to pump the brakes here a little bit on that. Bowling Green's bad against the run.
Yes.
I mean,
they were the worst.
So were some of those teams I mentioned that Tennessee played against.
But they gave up over 300 yards a game last year. So here's the thing.
But you still did it.
You did. Yep. And here's the thing.
Which is his point.
Right, yeah. That I did like when you watched him last night, and I think this is sort of what you're getting at too, is the concepts of how they run the football are, you don't have to be the road grading, all right, we've got to out-mash everybody, Austin.
That's
you know what I'm saying? They run a little inside trap where Princeton Fant's the lead blocker for a big gain. They do some stuff where you don't have to be a physically dominating team to run the football, which has not been the case and was not the case in Jim Chaney's offense.
Well, correct. And you know, I thought, you know, when Ollie Lane came in, you know, because that, to me, that was an interesting moment in the game. Cooper goes out, and I think everyone in the stadium and I think everybody in the press box thought, okay, they're just going to slide Cade into guard and bring in Dane Davis. No, they brought in Ollie Lane and kept Cade out at tackle. And Ollie wasn't great that second quarter. He was part of the kind of like the loss of momentum. But then in the second half, I thought really held up and did well. You know, and kudos to him because, you know, that's a guy that, you know, hadn't played, you know, any real football since he was in high school. I mean, you know, just practice and then mop up duty when you're either up 30 or down 30.
Yeah, and again, I was surprised by that move, too, because, I mean, all we had heard is, okay, Dane's number six.
Yeah.
So if there's an injury there, they're going to slide and everything. And they made a commitment, all right, let's go play Ollie Lane and see what he can do. And I think that part of that decision is you don't know how long Cooper's going to be out. I know Coach said he would be back next week. We'll see how the ankle responds. Pitt has a couple outside guys. You know, they can come off the edge with some outside backers and some things that maybe you feel like your best matchup against Pittsburgh is with Cade being outside.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, you better get Ollie Lane all the work he could get him. And you got him. And he got better. Well, is he going to grade out perfect? No. But he was, as your point made, he's a much better player in the second half than he was in the second quarter.
Well, I thought Darnell Wright was really solid last night. You know, I mean, when you look at, you know, the totality of his career to this point, you know, he's had a few plays where you're like, okay, I can see the high school ranking, and then a few where you're like, eh. Now, I thought last night he went unnoticed, and that to me, that's a good thing because that means he's just doing his job and not getting beat.
Well, speaking of high school rankings, Amari Thomas, I thought, looked really good last night on the defensive line. And the defensive line as a whole, again, you know, we preface it, Brent, with what you said earlier. They're really bad running the football, but they were living in Bowling Green's backfield on passing plays. And it really caused Bowling Green that second quarter to change the way they were playing to every time try to roll the pocket because he couldn't sit back there and throw or he was going to get batted down or he was going to get sacked. And that's a testament to Rodney Garner and that defensive line, which is a veteran defensive line.
Well, and there's no doubt they're better. I mean, they're a better coach, better play. I mean, Rodney Garner played 11 guys last night. Probably should have played 12. Aubrey Solomon didn't play a snap. I think if he would go back, he'd probably find a way to get Aubrey on the field and get some work for him as well. Don't know that they've got four guys that he thinks are vastly superior to anybody else. They're a little bit more of a product of the sum of their parts, you know, the whole part of it. But they were offensive. I mean, they were
disruptive.
We've heard vertical, you know, with the defensive line, meaning play upfield. And I thought they did that last night. I thought it was a nice start for that group.
Yeah, I thought Caleb Tremblay had a nice start to his Tennessee career and what will be just a drive-by because, I mean, he's only here for the one semester to play football. But you're right. You know, I do think that the group as a whole is what you're going to look at more so than any individual person because, you know, the way they play Barron, you know, at Leo, and sometimes he's got his hand on the ground, sometimes he doesn't. You know, he's more outside backer than he is really defensive end in a lot of ways. But, you know, you look at the defensive line, they're kind of like, the running backs or the wide receivers. Like, I'm not sure that any particular guy is going to be consistently the guy. Every week it may be somebody different. Well, by the way, I feel like we're leaving Hutton out.
And Hutton, they played without their arguably their most productive guy in preseason camp on the defensive line last night, Byron Young.
Yeah.
Well, some can be greater than the parts, and I think that's okay for that group, right, with the way they're coached.
Well, yeah. you're always going to rotate bodies. I don't care what level of football you're playing, and nobody's playing four defensive linemen an entire game. So it is about how many bodies can you have.
Well, and they're not going to be facing Heupel's offense week to week like the other defensive lines will be doing, right? I'm always curious about this because I don't know how much practice you guys watch regime to regime. I'm always kind of dumb to that.
About the same three periods, give or take periods.
What did you know about the offense that you saw last night versus what you learned along with Chad and I because we saw it for the first time? Like quarterback play, pace of play. I didn't know if the pace would mean they're going to get to the line and look to the sideline for a check with me and then go through the motions and the play clock runs down a little. This was fast, quick execution, especially those two opening drives. It was impressive. And to me, I'm thinking in the moment, this is going to be extremely difficult to play, to practice for, to play against.
Yeah, I do see what you're saying. I think I learned that they go faster than I thought they would. Like, I knew they would go fast, but like, watching the people behind me in the press box try to keep up with stats, and then I can only imagine what it's like in the truck. You don't ever get to go to a replay.
Think about the chain crew.
It's just constant. And so they go way faster than – and I knew they went fast, but, like, it's warp speed. I mean, like, there were times where the offensive line, I mean, the guy barely hit the ground to be tackled, and
yeah,
they are over there ready to go. I mean, like, you know, they get going, and they go at a pace that I've never seen.
The only thing I've seen close to that was Tennessee played at Oregon. And when Oregon came to town here, they played pretty fast, but they were on the road and it was out there, it was a blitzkrieg. I mean, it was one of those deals where it was like that. And the epitome of that last night is Cooper Mays got hurt. And, I mean, he's grimacing in pain, but he's thinking in his head.
Running to the huddle.
I've got to get to the ball because we got to go.
Yeah, not even the huddle. You're right. Running to the line.
That way before he had to check himself out.
Which goes back to the story that, you know, Joe Milton told about Cade from fall camp of, you know, he was, you know, he overextended himself. He got a little injured. And instead of, like, thinking about himself, he was thinking about getting the next play and keeping the drive going in fall camp during an 11-on-11 setting. You know, and that was a play that really stood out to Joe when he knew what Cade was about. Similar thing with what you're referencing with Cooper, same family, but I mean, like, you know, let's get to the next thing. And then when we got to a stop in the action, he was quick to tap out.
Yeah, he was
hurt.
I think the other thing that jumped out to me a little bit, and in practice I thought his feet were good. Tyon Evans' feet's better than I thought, and I
but
thought
you don't
they
get
were
to
good
see
in,
that a whole lot.
In, yeah, but you could see in drills he had pretty good, but in traffic he was better than I thought he would be, and I'd heard all the buzz about him, and then he gets in the game and it's kind of you're like, okay, where's this at? And then he settled into the game, and I thought he really got in a rhythm. His feet are really good, really good.
Chad, you pointed that out last night.
Yeah.
In the backfield.
Absolutely. I thought he certainly, I think, was the most impressive of the two that played the most. We talked about this with Joe Milton also, and I wonder if you guys noticed the same thing. Speaking of feet, how calm Joe Milton's feet are. And I always go back to the first time I can remember seeing this was James Franklin at Missouri. And this was kind of a Gary Pinkel thing. Chase Daniel, maybe before that, also did the same thing where they don't move their legs at all. They get to a spot, and it looks like they're just hanging out, leaning up against the wall in the pocket. And Joe Milton was doing the same thing last night. I've seen this with some Josh Heupel quarterbacks, and I've really seen it in Missouri in the past. Did you guys notice that at all, just how calm his feet were in the pocket?
Yeah, I mean, he just – at times you're like, is he still awake? I mean, like, yeah. I mean, like, he almost dozes off back there, and then he does one of these go-deep deals. And, you know, I mean – you know, I think that that's something that they're going to have to somewhat coach out of him, though, because I think it's almost to a, you know, I won't say it's not a detriment, but I think ultimately they would like him to probably move around just a little bit more than just being such a statue, because I think once he realizes he's got to go, it takes a second for him to get going. He's not Michael Vick, okay? So, like, he's a bigger guy that, he can move, but, again, that first two or three steps is not going to be as quick as a smaller guy.
Don't you think that watching that and seeing that it reminds me, or it looks like a guy who's spent his entire life going, my arm's really, really good. I don't have to worry about my lower body. I don't have to worry about my trunk. I don't have to drive into the ball. I don't have to use my legs. I mean, he throws that Hail Mary, and did he even step into the throw? I mean, it's one of those deals where it's like, I'll just flip my wrist, and that's it. And I think, to Austin's point, because that arm is so strong, it can work against him a little bit from time to time. And I think that's the case. I think sometimes he gets, quote, too casual back there because he knows, hey, if a guy comes open, man, I can just pop it right there, as opposed to staying on his toes, bouncing around. David Cutcliffe would be having a conniption watching him play because, I mean, for years,
Happy Feet
Manning, right? I mean, it was every drill was about staying on your toes, moving your feet, and Joe's back there going, he's just still. I mean, it's not that he doesn't, that he's not, or that he's flat-footed. He's stuck flat-footed looking like. He just doesn't move at all because he believes in that arm so much, and rightfully so. It's a great arm.
Talking about trusting his arm, and we talked about this one play with him where Cedric Tillman's on a post, and he's motioning to him, and his feet aren't really even set. They're facing the other way, and he throws across his body to Jalen Hyatt on the sideline. That's a play that was reviewed where he stepped out, but it was a nice throw and catch for a big gain where it looked like he didn't even turn his body towards Jalen Hyatt, and he's motioning towards Cedric Tillman, and as he motions, he throws back to Jalen Hyatt immediately. That shows that confidence in the arm.
It does, but Joey Halsley, when he met the media for the first time, Austin, talked about how they've had to work and are doing some work with his feet. Because I do think they want to turn his, you know, get him turned a little bit more at times and try to use the lower trunk to help him with some accuracy as well.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a lot of God-given ability. But imagine if he cleans up some of the minor technical flaws. I mean, he's only going to get better and better. So, I had a chance to visit with him over here, you know, before he came on with you guys. And I said, have you watched the film from last night? You know, and he said, yeah. I said, well, what did you think of your play? And he goes, I've got to just trust it and go. He goes, I held on to it last night too long. I mean, he understands. I mean, he owned his mistakes over there with me. I mean, like, so, I mean, I think that, you know, he's going to think about it next week, and we'll see if he's able to process and improve from game one to game two.
Big takeaway, big thing that I saw with Joe Milton, and I've heard about this from you guys and others that cover Tennessee in camp, and I saw it last night. He needs a changeup. He's got a fastball at 100 miles per hour, and I've yet to see that changeup of a touch throw. And I'll go back to the – everybody keeps talking about the Jalen Hyatt drop on a big play. And, yes, he technically dropped it. Hutton and I are in the end zone going to concession stand at that point, watching that from behind. And I don't know how any human would have caught that football. It was thrown so hard. Rarely could you see a ball thrown that hard with that velocity that far down the field. It was a very difficult catch for that reason, and it didn't have to be thrown that hard. Do you guys see some of that with Joe Milton needing that changeup?
Well, I mean, you go back and Ricky Vaughn had the Terminator in Major
That's
League
true.
One,
yeah.
And then when he got to Major League Two, he tried to bring in the Humiliator and all that other stuff. When he just needs the Terminator,
we can't say what it was called.
I understand he's got to throw with more touch. I understand.
Yeah.
But as Heupel pointed out last night, nothing was too hard in the short. So the pass you're referencing in Heupel's mind, that should have been that you can't throw it that hard. I mean, it might have been hard to most, but that should have been a catchable ball. So, I mean, yeah, you got to throw it with better touch. My thing is like, you know, was
but
he
look,
just
Jalen Hyatt deserves some blame on
those
it too.
Two
I'm not
deep
saying
balls
that, but that was
early,
a tough throw.
On just overthrows. Was that just being too amped up in the moment? I mean, the guy's, you know, had a long off season. He wins the job, you know, gets out there. I mean, it could be just as simple as that. He had a little extra adrenaline flowing, and you know, his arm, you know, with extra adrenaline is going to throw it even further.
Yeah, and, you know, those were the two bigger throws to me because both those guys were open. And
yeah.
you got to give your guy a chance to make a play mm-hmm. there. You can't overthrow, you know, that one. The one on the Hyatt deal, I mean, that ball was screaming. But Jalen's got to do a better job of not letting that ball get to his waist. I mean, he tried to catch that against his body. He had his hands in. He didn't get his hands out far enough. He's got to catch that ball with his hands and not try to eat it up with his waist. And I think that ball, because of speed, probably got on him a little faster than he thought it was going to get there. Did he have to throw it that hard? No, he didn't. But my guess is Joe throws it that hard every day in practice. If he didn't show the change last night, my guess is you're not seeing a change on the practice field, right? I mean, I think he's, you know, it's the old Lou Brown, you know, don't mess with the curveball, give him the heater. I mean, I think he's throwing it hard every day. By the way, we're gonna go Major League reference to the whole hour here.
Let's do it, yeah. Or Major League too.
I think he's throwing it hard every day. That's just a ball that Jalen's got to catch on that one. But
he's
it was
toughening up the fingers of his receivers every day, is what you're
Travis
saying.
Travis Tritt just CG'd Brent as Joe Boo.
While we're discussing the offense, what was this like for the Vol Network last night calling this offense? We discussed the how much you would be able to work in between snaps. Did you even speak much last night, Brent?
I tried to stay out of Pat Ryan's way as much as I could, and it was fast. I mean, it was one of those where, you know, you don't have from a spotter standpoint, and I did not have a great night spotting last night. So anybody out there ripping Bob Kessling probably ought to rip me first. But you know, from a spotting standpoint, there's really, when they're going, there's no substitution on offense. Like it's going, and you got to get ready. I mean, there was a couple times I'm pointing to who made the tackle, and then, you know,
they're
I look
playing.
Up and the ball's the ball's in play. I'm like, wait a minute, we've got to get. So there's some adjustment there, but it's fast, and it's particularly in the first quarter. And we got to the end of the first quarter, and we're all like, we got how many more quarters left to go? Because I'm going to be really tired.
Would
in a
you
minute.
Equate it to like the end of like those commercials where they have to do like the terms and guidelines
yeah,
thing, where
exactly.
they do that really like fast forward?
That's right.
You know,
I mean, it's quick. You know, I mean, it's one of those deals where you're trying to, and it's, and I'll give you the behind the scenes deal. Pat's got a monitor there, and you can either have the TV truck, the actual over the air feed, or you can have the clean video feed that's going out. Well, typically you always use the over-the-air feed, even though there's a delay on it, because you can watch it and then you can look down and see the play without it necessarily being a replay because it's that far behind. But they were going so fast, you never got to that play. So like when Pat would look to say, okay, exactly what happened here, they were snapping the ball there. So it's like, okay, change this. We got to have a clean video real time here because that's how fast they were snap. If you were watching at home, the play that was happening in the stands was the next play while you were watching the
previous
play.
There was one instance where it was two plays. Like, I went up, I was like, I'm going to watch the replay. I've been over. They run a play. They've still not snapped the ball. And they're over the ball to snap it again. And they snapped. It was the same time. I was like, I was like, wow, we're two plays behind on TV.
Yeah.
You know what really goes fast in those situations? Three and outs.
Yeah.
Because those two three and outs, I turned to Hutton at one point and said, that's fourth down? I think I missed a second down play just like blinking or closing my eyes for a second. And I'm thinking, oh, they're already punting? That was awfully quick.
That's why first down is the biggest key for this offense to be successful. They've got to move the chains to get into that warp speed. Because if you don't, it's a 30-second drive. And that's the bottom line.
More coming from VolQuest.com's Brent Hubbs and Austin Price. It's the VolQuest Power Hour. We're talking all things Tennessee athletics, Tennessee football. Tony Vitello coming up, by the way, in about 45 minutes as we broadcast live right here in K-Town. It's Outkick 360. Outkick 360, talking college football. Tennessee's win over Bowling Green last night. We'll preview the upcoming week a bit as well with Brent Hubbs and Austin Price, VolQuest.com, and the VolQuest Power Hour. Chad Withrow on that end. Jonathan Hutton here. Glad you're with us. If you're watching on YouTube, we hope you'll subscribe. If you are downloading on the podcast post-show, please like and subscribe that. Share that with your friends, and you can download the podcast wherever you download your podcast on your mobile or smart device. Guys, you mentioned the defensive line defensively for Tennessee. Was there anything you didn't like defensively last night?
You know, I was surprised that Juwan Mitchell didn't show up a little bit more at the linebacker position.
I realize that's a hard question against Bowling Green here. Like, maybe you have to nitpick a bit to find something really bad. But
well, I wouldn't say it was really bad. I just thought that he would maybe make more of an impact. I think what happened to Tennessee in the second quarter, Austin, is – I think Bowling Green did a couple of different things, and I think Tennessee got a little confused, and I think they had some miscommunication on the field where maybe one side of the ball or one side of the field wasn't playing it the same as the other side, and it created some big plays for Bowling Green to let those two drives happen.
Well, they run a couple of rub or pick plays. They hit them with a wheel route. I mean, you know.
Which is always open, by the way.
It is always open. They found some people, you know, out in space, and so now they did move it between the 20s, but Tennessee's able to hold them to, you know, two long field goals there in that that second quarter. To answer your question, I would go just kind of the linebacker rotation in general. He's right, Juwan Mitchell didn't show up like I thought he would, but like this, every third series they put in Solon Page and Aaron Beasley. Like, if they're gonna do that against Pitt, like that's a head scratcher to me. I get trying to get some of those guys reps, and maybe that's what it was, but they are also, you know, just they got it kind of exposed when those kids were on the field. I think those kids can, you know, they're going to play them fine, but why do you need to exchange out every linebacker at one time, every third series? Like, it wasn't like the defense was gassed. At least that's the way I felt.
Did you laugh when Bowling Green ran the rail route or the wheel route for a big game? Because I'll tell this story.
So no one was covering him, by the way.
It was a complete bust.
He was wide open.
Yes. We were at the unveiling of the Trailblazer statues yesterday morning, and Heupel's there. And so he walks by and says, hey, how's going on? How you guys doing? Whatever. And Austin jokingly says, hey, Coach, you ought to open the play. You ought to open the game.
I said, are you going to let me and Hubs call the first play?
Right. And then he said, well, what would it be? And Austin said, well, the wheel route's always open. He said, you sound like my wife. She says that too. And sure enough, Bowling Green runs it, and there's nobody there. I chuckled. I thought of you sitting on the other side of the glass.
Hutton got a great picture of that from our seat. On that play where the running back is just bolting to the boundary and there's no one around him.
Yeah, it was
a complete
bust.
The ball's being thrown just lobbed to him.
The wheel route's always open against Alabama. If Tennessee don't run that at least four times, I mean, seriously, like, how many times have you seen that happen against Alabama? Like, they get kind of exposed by throwing it to the back out of their backfield.
If Georgia would have kept running it, they'd have won a national championship.
Yeah.
They just quit running it in the second half because it was open the entire game.
You know, someone that was not exposed yesterday was Theo Jackson. And I know you guys wrote about the game that he had last night. It seems like, you know, guys like that stick with it. He's a local kid from Nashville. This is sort of his year to prove it in a lot of ways. I thought it was a really good start for Theo Jackson. Punt return, I was joking with Hutton too. The punter was really pissing me off for Bowling Green because the kid was terrible at punting. But somehow he kept finding a way to like luck his way into a decent punt. And every time it was different. There was no rhyme or reason.
He would have a ground ball
one time, then he have a high 20-yard punt the next time that took a great hop. And I thought that Theo Jackson's punt return was kind of caught in the wash of just a terrible punter that didn't know what he was doing.
Yeah,
but defensively, I thought he was good.
Do we think we found the fart in the skillet last night, Mike Eckler wanted?
Mike Eckler found some blood on his forehead that they showed on the screen in the stadium headbutting someone pregame. We looked up, and he had a stream of blood coming down his forehead from headbutting a guy in a helmet.
Stunned, said no one.
Looked more like a shart in a microwave last night.
to answer your question on Theo Jackson, I think Theo Jackson is a great example of a guy getting a fresh start with a new coach.
Yeah, and Willie's built up the confidence.
I think Willie Martinez is a perfect fit for him. I do. I think he's a perfect fit. I think Willie probably recruited him a little bit coming out of high school, so he knows him. And you see this from time to time. You see guys get a new voice. It's their final run, and the opportunity hits them there, and they get off to a good start. And I thought he got off to a good start. He played well.
How would you compare Theo Jackson? Now, granted, he's played safety all up until this year. Now he's playing star. But like, how would you compare him to like a guy like Ladarrell McNeil or even Emmanuel Mosley from like demeanor standpoint? Like, they seem like very similar kids demeanor wise.
Yeah,
like, you know, and talent level.
I think Theo's been through so much that he's probably numb to some things, you know, and just kind of even keel on some stuff. I don't think he gets too wound up. I think he's been easy for Willie Martinez in terms of trying to teach these guys, hey, you got to immediately get to the next play because you're going to play Ole Miss who's playing fast or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, he makes a play and you're like, that's a pretty good play. And Theo's like, I did. Go back, get where I'm supposed to. I mean, like, there's no celebrating. He was just even keel all the way through. And I do think that's his personality. And I think that's the result of playing, not playing, being through kind of what he's been through in his career at Tennessee.
Brent, you had mentioned that there was a clear identity for Tennessee. This is what they're going to do on offense. This is what they're going to look like. Did you see any of that with Tim Banks' defense in this game? Or was there even an opportunity to show an identity against a really bad Bowling Green offense?
I don't know that there was much of an identity to show, Austin, because, I mean, they didn't have to blitz a whole lot. I mean, I think they were pretty vanilla. I thought they were better in man coverage than they were in zone coverage overall. Can they play man against really good offensive teams? Can they play man against, this Pitt offense that's coming in that's going to throw it a lot better? That'll be a question mark in the storyline heading into this game week. I thought they were pretty vanilla on defense, which you would expect.
Yeah, I thought they were vanilla. I don't think they really kind of showed anything that they could potentially do. And honestly, if they can somehow win this appeal this week for Byron Young, I think it's probably a good thing he didn't play because Pitt doesn't know what he is. And, I mean, I know we all know what he's been able to do in fall camp. Now, does that equate to a game field? Not necessarily, but I think it's good that there's nothing out there on him. There's no tape. There's no tape on what moves he likes to hit him with. So in the secondary, you know, having a guy like that up front only helps them. But they really weren't challenged a whole lot last night. And a couple of throws that the quarterback for Bowling Green made last night were a couple of nice dimes that where he – did show touch.
Yeah.
He did hit him with the humiliator and humiliated him on a couple of drives.
No, I thought he was pretty good rolling the ball. I mean, he threw the ball better than anything that you saw out of them last year when they lost five games. I mean, clearly he's got a pretty good connection with Osborne, you know, and those guys know each other. And, you know, he was going to that well pretty often.
What is going on with Byron Young? Is this a Bishop Sycamore situation that he was playing for? What is the deal with the late notice of the, or at least the late announcement?
He was playing. He was playing he played two games for a prep school in Mobile, Alabama in 2017. He came out of high school, went to State of South Carolina, moved down to Georgia, ended up going to a prep school down at Gulf Coast something, down in Mobile. Played two games, then they folded. Okay, that's when he found himself working at Dollar General store as an assistant manager. Found the flyer, went to Georgia Military. Picks Tennessee over Auburn, rest is history. But because of those two games, his eligibility clock started then. The NCAA has some kind of rule in place to where it does not kill the whole season, but I think it's basically one of those two-for-two type things. So, like, he played two games, so they're going to have to sacrifice the first two of this year. But they were appealing that. And so I think they still had a little bit of case to make before they know whether they potentially could get him back for Pitt. He'll be back at worst by Tennessee Tech.
I think the other option was if you played him, he lost a whole year of eligibility.
Yeah.
And so if you went ahead and played him, then instead of having three, he would have two, because that whole year at prep school would have counted. But it's not his fault the school folded.
Yes.
And that's the point. But he played two games, so it's a right now it's a two for two.
And
deal.
That was back before the play the first four games and the redshirt deal. You know what I mean?
So they're Tennessee's trying to get that reduced to one game. They're, you know, it's the NCAA. I mean, they'll probably make a ruling on that in late November, you know, that he could only miss one game.
Of his third year in the NFL.
But you know, Tennessee's trying there. But that's the bottom line. With good work, good reporting by Austin to A, explain it and to dig into what it was. Because when you first heard it, you're like, this makes no sense.
Yeah.
So then you start wondering, was it something recruiting? Because he was recruited by the previous staff. None of that. He's not involved in any of that in any way. This is all about a strip mall prep school that went out of business.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing is, you know, when you look at, like, the stuff that started to kind of get its way into the message boards and stuff, I mean, you know, arrested, did this, did that, and I'm like, and you really couldn't say anything because Tennessee at the point was trying to appeal to get him eligible for last night. They weren't able to get that done, still trying to work through the appeals to get him back for Pittsburgh. We'll see if that happens. But, like, you really couldn't say anything because, like, what if he won the appeal? Then saying any of that stuff was a moot point. And, I you know, as I told somebody on campus, like, you know, this is something, like, you got to tell the full story here, because if you don't tell the full story, people are going to say, well, did he, you know, fail a drug test? Did he do this? Did he do that? Because he did nothing wrong. Did nothing wrong. And he's a really good kid.
I'm trying to figure out what we actually learned about Tennessee last night versus it just being Bowling Green.
We learned that Chad fell asleep during a second down play earlier.
Yeah. Well, no idea that the second down play happened.
We'll know less about Pittsburgh tomorrow as they play UMass ahead of this matchup against Tennessee. What do you expect from them next week?
Oh, I expect Narduzzi to come motivated, don't you, Brent? I mean, like, you know, going up against an SEC school, anytime you play one of those, you know, an ACC school or a Big 12 school that's maybe kind of the middle of the road or bottom part of the conference, they come motivated when they play an SEC school because, in their mind, winning any game in this against an SEC school is a big deal to help them with the recruiting or so on and so forth.
Well, and he's 0-2 in his career against Josh Heupel.
Okay.
Okay. So that's and the one in Orlando, if I'm not mistaken, was a hammer job by Central Florida. They beat them badly, or maybe it was a bowl game. Then there was another game they played that was much closer than that. He's a defensive minded coach, so he wants to shut down the offensive gurus. Okay. I mean, he's going to be all about that. Pitt is getting a lot of love from some people because they're bringing back a quarterback who started like 34 games. In his career, he played in 38 and he started 34 of them, and he took the COVID year and came back. A lot of people think he's going to be an NFL draft pick, like a mid-round NFL draft pick. 6'3", 220. He's got as many 400-yard passing games as Dan Marino. I get offenses are different, but anytime you can say a Pittsburgh quarterback right. And Dan Marino, suddenly he's elevated in his status.
Sure.
They got a couple wide receivers that can go. They will be a much different challenge for Tennessee defensively. And then Pitt's defense lost a lot, but I'm sure they're licking their chops after watching that tape. They think that they can really disguise some things and get Joe Milton out of rhythm pretty quickly. So I'm sure they'll come in pretty confident and highly motivated because of what Austin says. They're picked fourth in the Coastal, and then a lot of people are saying, well, they could be a 10-win team. Why are you 10 wins and fourth in the I've not watched all the ACC teams. I've not previewed them all. But if you win 10 games, I promise you you're not going to be fourth in the Coastal Division of the ACC. So I'm sure they got a pretty good motivation about them because they think they got a pretty good football team.
Brent Hubbs and Austin Price with us. When we come back, we'll wrap up the VolQuest Power Hour. I want to also discuss and get their take on Georgia as they take on Clemson tomorrow night. It's a part of our Outkick and Fox tour. And I'm trying to figure out the Bulldogs, what to expect, because Clemson's got some turnover with their roster, guys in the pros now. Georgia with a big prove-it year for Kirby Smart and their quarterback situation, too. I'm eager to get these guys' takes on the Georgia Bulldogs against Clemson and what a win would mean, more importantly, for that program. That's all straight ahead on Outkick 360. Hang with us. Outkick 360 across the Outkick Network, live in Knoxville. Brent Hubbs, Austin Price with us from VolQuest.com. We've been talking Tennessee football. We can talk some recruiting as well, Chad.
It's a big weekend, Austin, with the ability with the Thursday night game for coaches to get out on the road for high school games tonight. And I know you've got it covered at VolQuest with where everyone is going this weekend.
They're all out and about.
Yes.
And locally, we'll start with Josh Heupel. He and Rodney Garner will be at Powell and Carnes at 7 o'clock. That kickoff coming up in just a couple of hours as Deshaun Bishop, an ever-improving 2023 tailback, takes on Walter Nolan and those 2023 wide receivers at Powell. Then they'll go over to Catholic, where Catholic is playing Baylor. Trevor Duncan, a 2023 lineman that Tennessee likes a good bit, is in that football game. Tim Banks is up in the state of Michigan. He's up there seeing Jeremiah Caldwell, a kid that was once committed to Kentucky, DB, kind of a Tennessee-Michigan state battle right now. And he'll see also Masai Reddick while he's up there today, the Vol commit, the offensive lineman. Really coaches a little bit of everywhere. A couple coaches in the mid-state, that being Alex Golish and Brian Jean-Marie, Jerry Max out in Memphis. Coach Eckler is over in Charlotte, North Carolina, seeing James Pierce, the outside linebacker Leo that Tennessee likes a good bit and would love to get to campus, but he's yet to get here. Coach Halsley's up in Indianapolis, Indiana, seeing Taven Jackson. You've got Willie Martinez down in the state of Alabama, and you've got Coach Ellerby down in the state of Florida seeing Brian Grant. I think I've hit them all.
You did a good job.
It's like a bedtime story.
Yeah, I know.
Just sit back and watch.
Better than I could have done going through the geography of the country where they're going. So good job.
Busy weekend, and they could take advantage of this too, right, with the early game this week.
I forgot Cody Burns, who's always over in Arkansas, seeing Chaz Nimrod.
Okay,
go ahead.
There you go. The ability to take advantage of the open weekend, teams off. Right? Coaches are out recruiting.
Yeah, they're not taking any time off. They're out recruiting. They got film study tomorrow morning. They got meetings all day tomorrow, meetings Sunday. I mean, while everybody else may be enjoying the weekend off, the staff's not.
The staff's not, right? The players are.
No, the players have meetings.
We had two players tell us they were off this weekend.
Joe Milton told me he had meetings Saturday and meetings Sunday.
Joe Milton said they were going to start with the game plan tomorrow. I know he told us that.
Yes.
I didn't know when, but that's what he told us.
The one advantage to playing on Thursday night, though, is, look, coaches around the country at all schools are out and about tonight. The advantage Tennessee has by playing on Thursday night is they can go further out because nobody's got to try to get back for a noon start or get back for team meetings on a Friday night to get ready to go. So all of a sudden now Tim Banks can go to Detroit. He wouldn't be able to go to Detroit if it was Tennessee Tech week or Ellerby going to Florida. That's hard to do. That trip would have happened when Tennessee went to Florida. But because there's no game Saturday, they can go further out and spread out further for evaluation.
Coaches are naturally paranoid. And so, to Brent's point, coaches will go out, two, three, four-hour radius pretty easily.
Yeah.
But when they have a game the next day, they're not going to venture out more than about that. I mean, because they just
don't want to get back.
Well, they don't want any kind of distractions. They don't want to, look back and go, man, if we hadn't wasted all that time going to, six states over, we'd have been a little more focused as a staff and we would have beat Team X. It does give them that leeway where they don't have to worry about a game tomorrow. They've played the game last night and they just have to worry about getting together for meetings tomorrow.
Top five matchup tomorrow night, Clemson and Georgia. You buying the Bulldogs in this? It seems like everybody's picking Clemson, even though they're reloading. I mean, they're not rebuilding. They're reloading. But no Trevor Lawrence, no Travis Etienne. I'm curious to see what Georgia can do with the returning starters they have.
Well, I'm curious to see who all is going to play. There's stories out today that the receiver from Clemson's not going to play because of COVID. There's rumors out that one of their defensive tackles is not going to go because of some COVID stuff. Georgia's dealing with a bunch of injuries as well. I mean, I think the pregame warm-up, there'll be more binoculars on that than you normally see because that could change a lot as to who's going to go and who's not going to go because there's a lot of speculation but not a lot of confirmation on exactly who's there and who's not. How does Clemson's quarterback handle – I'm not going to try to say his name. How does he handle –
Uwe Ungele?
Something like that. How does he handle a big game? And JT Daniels seemed to find his stride at the end of last year, but against who, And so I think quarterback play will be really, really interesting to watch in this one. And you know, how does Kirby Smart attack a spread offense? That's been a big talk down in Georgia. Can they handle a spread?
And as Brent pointed out, there's just so much change. Like, outside of maybe like the Georgia running backs, I mean, tell me, you know, who's not going to be in this game that's not kind of a fresh face or has very little experience. I mean, a lot of talent, but not proven talent outside of, you know, the Georgia backs and, you know, a couple of the Clemson receivers who are back from a year ago.
Guys, thank you for coming by and joining us here in person. Love having you on weekly, especially when you get the chance to do this in person. You guys are great.
Well, more importantly, thank Brent. His kid's got a game in 2 hours. Gibbs Eagles taking on Carter. Big region game. Eli, my prediction, one sack, one touchdown, 8 tackles.
I gotta go.
Gibbs wins, unlike the poor mouther will let you believe.
I gotta get out of here because I gotta get my ankles taped, some baby food, and a little pickle juice in me. I gotta get myself ready to go.
He cramps when he yells at the referee. Exactly
right. Austin's about to get a parking ticket, so he's bouncing too.
You're terrible to wait.
You got 2 minutes, Austin.
Guys, thank you.
Hey, tell the rose petals to get ready over there, all right?
Thank you, guys. Appreciate you.
VolQuest.com is the website. Big thanks to Brent Hubbs and Austin Price. PK is going to join us from Nashville in a matter of minutes. And then Tony Vitello joins us live right here in Knoxville for Outkick 360 as we wrap up the final hour of the show. It's straight ahead. Hang with us.
Hey, it's Jonathan Hutton. Thanks for listening to Outkick 360. Be sure to subscribe to the show to have the latest podcast delivered to you each and every day. And give us 5 stars. It helps us grow our network and provide you with more great podcasts like this one.